Thank you, Dr. Tan. Let me move then to Dr. Carolyn Bridges, Associate Director for Adult Immunization at the CDC. Dr. Bridges, you're on.
Thanks so much, Brian. LJ, that's going to be a tough talk to follow, but thank you so much. So today I'm going to be updating you on where we are with adult immunization recommendations. And I will just start by reviewing some of the burden of disease for vaccine-preventable diseases in adults. We know that vaccines are needed throughout the lifespan to reduce the burden of vaccine-preventable disease, but there remains a very high burden among adults in the United States. For example, for influenza, there are between 3,000 and 49,000 influenza-related deaths per year, about 90% of which occur among adults 65 and older. For hepatitis B in 2009, there were an estimated 9,419 cases of acute hepatitis B, the vast majority of which, again, are in adults. And for invasive pneumococcal disease in 2009, there were 43,500 cases estimated and about 5,000 deaths, again, the large majority in adults. And even for pertussis, the 27,000 total cases of pertussis, a sizable proportion, though not the majority, but a substantial number, 6,640, were estimated to occur among adults, and about 4% of these adult cases were hospitalized. And there are an estimated about 1 million cases of zoster shingles annually in the United States. The adult immunization schedule is published yearly, and it has been so since 2002. The 2012 version was published early in February in both the Annals of Internal Medicine as well as in the MMWR. The adult schedule is approved by the ACIP, but also by the American College of Physicians, the American Academy of Family Physicians, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and this year, for the first time, the American College of Nurse Midwives. So we're very happy to have our nurse midwife colleagues as well involved in adult immunizations. The next slide shows you the 2012 ACIP adult immunization schedule. And there are two figures that accompany the schedule. One looks at age groups, and the other looks at risk conditions. The two main changes from 2011 to 2012 are for the TD and Tdap vaccines as well as HPV vaccines. For HPV, it has now been divided into a row for females and a row for males. In addition, we have two age groups, the 19 to 21-year-old age group and 22 to 26-year-olds. So for this year, the recommendations for HPV were made in October of 2011, and these changes are reflected in the 2012 adult immunization schedule. And what we have now is a change where males up through 21 years of age are now routinely recommended to receive HPV vaccine, and males 22 to 26 years of age are recommended to receive the vaccine if they have certain meet other certain criteria, and it's also there's permissive use available for 22 to 26-year-old males. The other change is the Tdap vaccine for 65 and older compared to 2011. Now the Tdap vaccine is recommended for household contacts or close contacts of infants less than 1 year of age, with either TD or Tdap available for adults 65 years of age and older who are not close contacts of children less than 1 year of age. For the 2013 schedule, we anticipate that as the vote occurred in February at the ACIP meeting, that this will become a solid yellow bar for 65 and older, and that people 65 years of age and older will routinely all be recommended to receive one dose of Tdap substituted for a dose of TD. The next slide is figure two on the ACIP schedule that includes information on medical, occupational, and behavior-based recommendations. Some of the changes you'll notice for this year is that, again, you'll see the differences for human papillomavirus vaccine, that there are now a separate row for females and one for males, with routine use recommended for certain high-risk groups for males now indicated. So the other thing that we did was to make a column for men who have sex with men, and HPV vaccine for males is recommended for MSM, as is hepatitis A and hepatitis B vaccines specifically, and a number of other vaccines are also recommended if other conditions apply. So those are the major changes for HPV. There are additional changes for hepatitis B vaccine. Hepatitis B vaccine is now recommended for persons less than 60 years of age who have diabetes, with the recommendation that people with diabetes receive their hepatitis B vaccination as soon as possible after their diagnosis. For patients who are 60 years of age and older and have diabetes, they can receive hepatitis B vaccine at the discretion of the physician. So how are we doing with vaccination with all these recommendations for adults? Well, this is an example of how we're doing with influenza vaccine coverage. And it looks at the progression for influenza vaccine coverage among adults from 2007 through the 2010-11 influenza season. I do not have data yet for the current influenza season, 11-12. So for last season, if you look at high-risk persons, 18 to 64, we've had a very modest increase of about 2 percentage points increase over the last four influenza seasons. And for 65 and older, it looks like we might have had an actual decrease in coverage of 72% to 67%. And I wanted to highlight these two highest risk groups because these are the groups at greatest risk of hospitalization and death from influenza. And we need to ensure that these high-risk people are vaccinated. There continue to be racial and ethnic disparities in seasonal influenza vaccine coverage among adults, as shown in this table, where we see for the last 3 years higher coverage rates for white non-Hispanic adults and lower coverage in black non-Hispanic and Hispanic adults in the United States. One bit of good news is that the racial and ethnic disparity among children has not been seen now with for the last influenza season, actually the highest rate in Hispanic children with slightly lower rates in black non-Hispanic and white non-Hispanic children. So we need to do a better job in reducing disparities among adults. Another group of high interest for influenza is pregnant women. This slide shows data from the National Flu Survey and compares the November survey data for the 2010-11 season in green to the 2011-12 season in purple. And from interviews conducted in November, the proportion who'd received vaccine by that time was very similar from 2010-11 compared with 2011-12. If you look at the April survey for 2010-11, the total vaccination coverage among pregnant women was 49%. This is an increase over what we've had for some prior years, but still we have a long way to go to ensure we have adequate vaccination of pregnant women. Now I'd like to talk about coverage for some other vaccines. For pneumococcal vaccine, this is based on the National Health Interview Survey in 2010. Coverage was 18.5% for high-risk persons 18 to 64 years of age and almost 60% for people 65 and older. There was no significant change from National Health Interview Survey data from the prior year. Similarly, for tetanus, coverage rates did not change from 2009 to 2010, with coverage for adult groups in the low 60s to low 50s. For tetanus vaccine, which included pertussis vaccine, coverage rate was estimated to be 8.2% for 18 to 64-year-olds. This was an increase compared to 2009, although the rate is quite low. for hepatitis A vaccine among adults 18 to 49 years of age total. The coverage was 10.7%. For those who are high risk and indicated for Hep A vaccine, coverage was not a lot better at 14.6%. And for those specifically with chronic liver disease, again, there was a lot of room for improvement with vaccine coverage at 19.7%. For hepatitis B vaccine, for 18 to 49 years of age who had high risk conditions or behaviors, coverage was 42%. We also estimated the baseline level coverage for patients 19 to 59 years of age with diabetes, and at baseline, 23% were vaccinated against hepatitis B. For people 60 and older with diabetes, the coverage was almost 11%. And for non-high-risk 19 to 49-year-olds, the coverage was 33%. So again, a substantial room for improvement for Hep B as well. For zoster vaccine, there was an increase in coverage compared to 2009, with a total estimate of 14.9% coverage, which was a 4.4 percentage point increase over the prior year. And there was also an increased coverage for women 19 to 26 years of age at 20.7% for HPV vaccine, which was a 3.6 percentage point increase over 2009. For males 19 to 21 and 19 to 26, we have a baseline estimate. So this estimate was 2010 before there was a recommendation for males. So a lot of room for improvement in all of those estimates. There are a number of barriers to adult immunization, some of which LJ already touched on, but one of those certainly is a lack of awareness of vaccine recommendations for adults, both by patients as well as sometimes by providers. And again, many adults do not have regular healthcare providers, or they may see only specialists who may not think that adult immunizations are part of their routine. And prevention may also not be a priority, particularly among specialists who may only see patients for acute care visits. Another barrier is out-of-pocket costs for vaccines for many adults. And as LJ mentioned, this out-of-pocket cost may be particularly an issue for Medicare Part D vaccines, such as herpes zoster vaccine. Because of the cost, again, time constraints, there are also competing social and economic demands among adults, which may make immunizations a lower priority activity. And in addition, for patients and providers, the adult vaccine schedule is complicated. So there is a lot of education that needs to occur to allow patients to know exactly which of the various target groups they fit into and which vaccines they might need. In addition, there's limited public health resources that are expended on adult immunizations. For example, from the VFC program and 317 program funds for last year, approximately $3.5 billion were spent on vaccine purchases compared to $44 million from the 317 program that were spent on adult vaccines of the adult contract. So what is the good news? I think LJ gave us a lot of good news, and that the Affordable Care Act is expected to reduce the number of adults who are uninsured for vaccines. In addition, there are efforts to enhance state and local health departments' ability to bill for vaccines, which may provide an opportunity to vaccinate high-risk uninsured adults. And 317 funds can, when available, be used to address lagging vaccine coverage in adults. And there is also Medicare and Medicaid, which include coverage for adult vaccines, but can be difficult, particularly with Medicare Part D. A number of approaches are available to target high-risk adults. Some of the key drivers include improving knowledge of adult vaccines among providers and patients, increasing provider recommendations to their patients for vaccination, and working with trusted intermediary organizations and leaders to improve community uptake. Increasing convenient access to vaccines can also be very helpful, and we need to have repeated messages which are targeted to specific groups so that patients see themselves in those recommendations. Individual immunization champions and efforts at the local level can also make a big difference. And as we'll hear from Megan later, applying community guide principles and recommendations can also raise coverage rates. Some of the main reasons that adults don't get vaccinated were identified in this National Immunization Survey of adults in 2007. For flu, pneumococcal, and tetanus, some of the main reasons for not getting vaccinated weren't about cost or necessarily about side effects, but were because they didn't know that they needed those vaccines or their physician didn't recommend them. So ensuring that we have high rates of recommendations from providers can really be very helpful, making sure providers let patients know what vaccines are recommended for. One great example of the power of vaccine providers to increase immunizations is this data from the Internet Panel Survey for Pregnant Women. This is from November of 2011. Among pregnant women who said that their provider recommended vaccine and also offered the vaccine, coverage was 75%. Among pregnant women who received the recommendation, but there was no offer of vaccine, such as the provider not having vaccine in their office, the coverage was 37.5, or about half. But among pregnant women where there was no recommendation and no offer, coverage was only 10%. So that recommendation from the provider is very important. One meta-analysis shows as well that organizational changes using standing orders and other things to improve the efficiency of delivery of vaccines is also very critical to raising coverage. So in summary, there is a very high burden of disease, a vaccine-preventable disease in adults, and we have lagging coverage. We also have continuing racial and ethnic disparities in coverage. A number of steps are needed to improve coverage, including increasing provider and patient awareness of the burden of adult vaccine-preventable diseases and of vaccine recommendations. Increasing provider recommending and offering vaccines to their patients is also key. We also need to increase our monitoring and reporting on vaccine coverage, and hopefully we'll be able to increase the amount of data available for state and local jurisdictions. Partnering with vaccine provider groups, advocacy and community groups, public health and others are needed to ensure sustained efforts and progress in raising coverage. And I will stop there and thank you for your time.